We're going to reconvene back into open session. Mr. Crawford, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Please.
Okay, no announcements out of closed session. I'll turn it over to Yasmin Munoz for her reports.
So Marysville's new business, football is going to playoffs in Modesto this Friday. Volleyball is going to playoffs also on Tuesday in Grass Valley. Next food day is November 15th. Orange Nation, they order new shirts and should be in their student store shortly. And their Battle of the Sexes rally is next Friday. Lyndhurst, on their old business, has Senate meeting, which was last Wednesday, November 6th, in which they had a guest, their nutritional service manager, and she talked to the students all about the new varieties of food that is being served this school year. Lyndhurst football team had their last away game of the season against Capital Christian last Friday. Under new business, Lyndhurst has their talent show coming up on December 12th. Auditions will be next week. Also, right now, Lyndhurst Kids Can fundraiser is going on and ends November 18th. As a way to maintain a better and cleaner campus, the students of Lyndhurst High School are having a school-wide cleanup this Saturday, November 16th. And finally, Lyndhurst's next food day is on November 20th, and their last President's Council meeting is November 22nd.
Okay, thank you, Yasmin. I'd like to ask the board to step down front for our recognitions.
You'll notice that Penny is ready. She's our director for accounting and budget department, and tonight is her night to do her presentation, as well as recognize an A-plus classified employee. Penny.
Thank you, Gay. The person I've chosen for the A-plus employee recognition this year is someone who, when I started here 11 months ago, was instrumental in bringing me up to speed on the workings of our department. She also trained our new payroll technician, who is new to our department. She's currently training, cross-training our an additional attendance technician for our department. And above all of that, when Doug Swift retired, she assumed his categorical accounting duties. So without further ado, the other thing I would call her is Superwoman, because she seems to be able to do it all, and she does it well with a smile and a great attitude. Her name is Jennifer Pasalia. Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, we have two presentations tonight. First is a Williams Act update from Dr. Scotia Holmes Sanchez from the Yuba County Office of Education.
Good evening, Board. Dr. Todd, thank you for letting me be here tonight and giving our annual report. The Williams Report, is a report that is done by every county office in the state, and we are happy to report that all of the schools that were visited had all their materials in order. There and most of the schools had a good or better rating on their facilities. I'd like to thank very much Mr. Bilodeau and his maintenance department. They've done a great job of keeping the facilities up, whether they're new or rehabbed or needing a little repair. You have the reports before you. I'll entertain any questions if you have those.
I was just glad to see that Lyndhurst had done so well on this report.
They are improving, yes.
Yes, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, accounting and budget, Penny Lossing.
Board President Boone, members of the governing board, Superintendent Todd, I'd like to sincerely thank you for the opportunity to recognize my department and the nine highly dedicated employees who perform the accounting functions for the district. Our department follows the Business Services mission statement to provide quality support for student success, and we break that down into five main goals as noted here. Our department recognizes the fact that while we perform the necessary business functions of the district, we need to do so in a manner to build and strengthen positive working relationships with not only our school sites and other departments, but also the district community and the outside business world as well. Within the department, there are many responsibilities. Our main functions are noted here, but as I am sure you're aware, there are many other functions performed to manage the business of a district of our size. We process the payroll twice a month, accurately and on time. We provide employee benefits to all eligible employees. We pay the bills of the district with check runs three times a week. We record the revenues of the district and monitor the cash flow. We prepare, monitor, and adjust the budgets of the district throughout the fiscal year, and at year-end, we close the books by finalizing the unaudited actuals. Payroll is vitally important, and at MJUSD, we run a payroll system that is fiscally independent from our County Office of Education. Most school districts in the state are dependent on their county offices for auditing of payroll, to detect potential errors, the actual printing of paychecks, the reporting and payment of quarterly taxes, the printing of employee W-2s, and balancing and submitting retirement reports for STIRS and PERS. In our district, we do all of this ourselves, which adds a much higher element of responsibility to our payroll processing. Just so you're aware, the districts who use their county offices for those types of services do pay for those services as well. How many employees receive paychecks every month? On average, over 1,200. Over 830 timesheets are processed on average each month. And last year, we processed and mailed 1,725 W-2s. No matter what happens, payroll must run and be on time. We're proud of the employee benefits services we provide at the district. At our recent open enrollment period, employees determined the need for 288 individual changes to benefit plans, which were processed before the next payroll deadline. Our department is asked many times a day to answer questions and provide explanations to employees about their benefits, which we're happy to provide. This function includes new employee benefit sign-ups, where our new employees receive explanations of all their benefit options and are signed up according to the choices they make. We also balance the monthly CVT invoice that includes changes, additions, and terminations to ensure the accurate payment of our benefits, among others. We have 844 employees who currently participate in our health and welfare plan, 78 retirees, and with six bargaining units, up to 12 different medical plan options each, and that doesn't even count the dental, vision, and life. The American Fidelity Section 125 other insurance that's available, 144 employees take part in that opportunity. And our Omni 403B and 457 retirement plans, we have 232 employees who participate, and we pay over 30 companies. Accounts payable ensures all disbursements are accurate, timely, and made in compliance with established policies and procedures. Each invoice paid is carefully reviewed, and if needed, discrepancies are addressed before payment is made. Our revenue side, the accounts receivable, acts as central processing for child nutrition deposits and all our school site donations. All of the site donation funds received at our office are counted once upon receipt and again prior to deposit to ensure accurate and timely deposits to the county treasury. Accounts receivable also prepares invoices for outside entities who need to pay for services or goods provided to them by our district. Examples would be the print shop, which processes outside orders, our transportation department, which at times transports students of other districts, and we also provide fingerprinting services to places like YCOE and Yuba College, which must be invoiced among others. How many accounts payable checks were issued last year? Over 5,000. And of that, 16,135 invoices made up those 5,000 checks. On average, Walmart and Office Depot are over 150 invoices a month for just those two vendors that we process. On the receivable side, we have over 116 resources that record revenue, different pots of money. $274,000 in deposits were received from school sites, which again were counted two times once they get to our department. And we processed and billed 743 invoices to outside entities that owe us for something that we've provided. The district budget represents our fiscal plan to provide an educational program to fulfill our vision for the education of our students. Once the budget's developed and adopted by the governing board, then the process of maintaining accuracy, monitoring for changes, and balancing the budget begins and continues through the year. As you know, we make formal adjustments at first interim when we take a snapshot of the budget as of October 31st and present the balanced report by December 15th. Then again, we take a snapshot as of January 31st with the second interim report of adjustments due to the board by March 15th. While we're preparing the second interim, we're also developing the next year's budget for adoption prior to June 30th. Once we end the fiscal year on June 30th, we begin the lengthy task of closing the books, which eventually produces our unaudited actuals by September 15th each year. The entire process includes an Ed Code mandated review by independent auditors every year. We're pleased that the process is in place, thanks to Mark Allgaier, have once again resulted in no or minimal recommendations for improvement by our independent auditors. Last year, if you add all of our funds together, we recorded $113 million of revenue with expenses of $121 million, and that difference is from planned construction. The manual journals to complete that process, our accountants, our wonderful accountants, 151 interfund that you also have to make sure your cash balances back and forth, almost 780 general ledger journals, which are our actuals, and then over 1,500 budget transfers, 632 budget revisions. And don't forget those state and federal reports like the SACs that you see on a frequent basis. Now here's the fun part. These are the lovely, beautiful faces of the department. And this was were our happy witches from Halloween. Suzanne Walters with 17 years of MJUSD service. She's on the far left, and I'll move to the right. We have Lynette Abbott with 26 years of service, Kim Sutherland with 30 years, then Denise Yartz with 9 months, and Jennifer Pasalia with 5 years. On the other side of the hallway, we have Amy Littlefield with 8 years of service on the left. In the middle is C.C. Cruz with 10 months of service, and Karen Gibson with 9 months. And last but not least, our latest addition is Taylor Long. He has 2.5 months of service with Marysville School District. This is a listing of the staff, some of the functions that they perform, and their list of years of service. And I have to say a big thank you for all that they do. They're really wonderful. And that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions or comments?
I would just like to say that you guys do a phenomenal job. And I know all the staff is happy because you get get their checks on time.
Stand up, ladies. We have some of them here. Karen, Jennifer, and Lynette are here.
Let's give them a hand.
Yeah, thank you for all your hard work. Last year when the auditor came in, there was zero findings for the entire district.
Yeah.
Budget runs about, $750 million? So for a budget of that size, this many employees, 10,000 students, how many employees in the district?
We pay 1,200.
Pardon?
We pay over
1,200. And no findings for the entire district for the entire year. That's phenomenal. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before Penny leaves, I just would like to say that last year when Nancy Henshaw left, we were all very concerned. And it's nice now to know that that concern was unwarranted, and we found an absolutely wonderful person in Penny. So it's been a pleasure to have her here and to see her smiling face and to smell in my office the potlucks and the camaraderie that she has built in her department because of that. So thank you, Penny.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Paul.
Comments from board members, Mr. Miller?
I had the opportunity last week to go to Cedar Lane Carnival, and it was nice to see the parents and the kids, volunteers from the community out having a good time at one of the local schools, and it was really nice.
Mr. Rex?
I had a chance to visit Foothill the last week or so, and everything seems to be running well there, so... And all the campuses look very clean, and I haven't seen anybody but hardworking students.
Mr. Fleury.
We went two carnivals, was Arboga and Oliver's, and went as a Lions Club, not a board member, and was very impressed the number of people. Arboga must have had over 800 people there and several of the Lions, so that was the largest carnival they had ever participated in. I also had a chance to visit the after-school program with Ashley Vetti. She took me around after school on Wednesday, and she said, that's the most schools we visited. We visited Oliver's, Kynock, Covelod, Ella, and Edgewater in about an hour and a half. And at Covelod, she specifically wanted me to see that. They were putting on theater art, and it was very impressive. I think I saw you there, Glenn. You had a granddaughter or something in it?
Nope.
No, just there. It was a great thing to see the arts and what kids are doing in the after-school program. And Ashley, she's got a well-defined program. It's very lockstep, but yet it's got individuality for each site. She makes sure that she's got a team, and it's obvious. The five schools we visited really work together as a team. So I was very impressed with seeing that.
Mr. Harris.
I also wanted to mention the Covelod after-school program. Jack and the Beanstalk, it was impressive because they had, I think, 7 or 8 children that stood up and did solos, sang songs, and That's impressive that her staff gets them to do that and those kids get up and do that. It was really impressive to do that. But I'd also like to congratulate the sports teams that have made the playoffs. I think the girls played volleyball tonight, and I think Marysville plays Friday night. So I would like to wish them good luck.
Mr. Danable.
Yes, as we all know, yesterday was Veterans Day, and I just want to take a minute to thank the schools, Lyndhurst High, McKinney, and yes, Paragon, for their involvement in that parade. To us veterans, that is important. So I just want to extend a thank you and look forward to seeing it again next year.
Mr. Crawford.
I was lucky enough, once again, to visit the a couple of the schools that had their fall festival. It was Red Ribbon Week in the school district, and I'd like to thank the Marysville FFA for providing a petting zoo. That's I became real callous 38 years of teaching high school, but when you go back to see the little ones and a 5 or 6 year old just get a kick out of petting a little animal that's just been born, and it's really a neat thing. And the Marysville Fire Department, I want to thank them for bringing a truck. They must have let 200 or 300 kids sit in the driver's seat of a fire truck, and that might not seem like a big deal unless you're 5 years old and you never sat in one. And what's really amazing is the number of people between McKinney and Kynoch. I would say there was at least 300 people. We have such open space, which I like so much about our schools, at least some of our areas. And most of those people, I would say 80%, were there until it was so dark you couldn't see each other. They made snow cones. All the staff, or most of the staff, were there. And as a former teacher, I know how hard that is to do. They don't get paid for doing that. Just a warm, great feeling. And to the PTA, excuse me, of the Kynoch School. Just a great, great, great time. Thank you.
Okay. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. No. Operating Engineers Local Union 3. California School Employees Association 326-648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisor Unit, public comments, there are no public comment cards. Superintendent's report, Dr. Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Boom. There's been a lot of talk about Common Core, and tonight is not going to be an exception to that. Each meeting, I hope to bring forward what we are doing in Marysville Joint Unified School District to ensure that we have a successful implementation of Common Core. Tonight, I have a handout for you, which I'm going to pass that way, which is speaking specifically to the Common Core leadership teams. The teams are comprised of the individuals listed under each heading. The first heading is learning designs, communication, data and learning communities, resources, and alignment of policies and procedures. You'll see names listed and the activities that they've identified as being important to ensuring that we are fully implemented by next year with our Common Core. And the second document, I had an activity that I asked the site principals and assistant principals to engage in, and that was to share what they've been doing in the areas of report cards, which are a big item when you're in the elementary grades because it is a standards-based and now will be a Common Core-based report card. The crosswalks, that's an activity looking at the California state standards and aligning them to the new Common Core and what kinds of activities they've done to look at those two items at their sites. The continuums, which are documents that look at grade levels, the vertical alignment of those standards and where they are, where they used to be, and where those changes happen to be. Communication, how are they getting the news out to their parents and community? And then on the last several pages, the high schools listed all of their activities just by high school. And so I thought it was important to share what each and every site is doing, because sometimes one site is doing something that another site may not have thought of, and it is a very successful idea. So they did a lot of sharing and continue to do that. So I shared with you the first issue of the Common Core Connection tonight, and that will be printed and sent out to schools later this week. So it'll be in mailboxes and staff rooms before Thanksgiving break, because, again, communication is key to the successful implementation. I'm sorry Inga's not here tonight, for the president of MUTA. We've been doing a joint presentation to the grade levels that are meeting, one last week, two this week, and it continues almost through Christmas, meeting with the teachers to talk about, yes, this is new and different, and together we will figure it out. Because as I shared with the board last board meeting, Common Core is not something that came with a manual. And so we are figuring it out together. And I think the teachers appreciated the fact that both Inga and I were there to just say, just take a breath, we'll get through this together. So with that, that's the end of my report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Todd. Move on to approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of October 22nd, 2013. If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Rex. All those in favor?
Aye.
Five yes. Abstentions? Two. Mr. Danable, Mr. Boom abstain. Consent agenda. Would anybody like anything pulled on the consent?
I would like personnel services.
Personnel services. Personnel
two.
Services, which
number
one?
Two. Number two, the resignations.
Personnel services, number two. Anybody want anything else pulled?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Harris. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Rex. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. Go back to personnel services, number two on the consent agenda. Mr. Fleury.
We have a lot of employees that come and go, but there was one on here this week that I wanted for the record. Shannon Hicks, who is in the transportation department, she is the ninth member of her family to work for the district. She started 2 weeks after she was 18. She worked up in the transportation department quickly, and she's one of our trainers. She was one of the state rodeo winners over the years. She brought the department together, and it's really going to be a loss for our district to lose someone of this caliber. And I talked to Scott, and he said it's really going to leave a hole in it. She has done so much, so I wanted that for the record. She's just been an outstanding employee for a young girl that's driven down from the hills. I think she's 24 now and moving on to Lake Tahoe District, I think, right, Romero. So I just wanted that for the record. She just was an outstanding employee that we're losing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fleury. Any other questions or comments? If not, is there a motion under personnel services number two? Motion by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Danable. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. Okay, move on to new business. This is under Board of Trustees, annual organizational meeting of the Board of Trustees. Purpose of this item is to request the board select a day and time for the annual organizational meeting. It's recommended that the board hold the annual organizational meeting on December 10th, 2013 at 6:30. If nobody has any problems with that, I will need a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Motion from Mr. Harris.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Rex. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. Resolution 2013-14-13, excuse board members' attendance at meeting of the Board of Trustees. Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there seconded by Mr. Danable? All those in favor?
Aye.
Six yes. One abstention. All abstain. Facilities Department. Resolution 2013-14-14, California Energy Commission Bright Schools Program. Is Michelle here for this?
Yes, she's here.
Michelle, do you want to come forward and explain the agenda item to everybody, please?
The Bright Schools Program is a program that is put on by the California Energy Commission. and it's in relation to Prop 39 that was passed by the California taxpayers last year, and that's giving the schools of California somewhere around $500 million for 5 years, and out of that, Marysville School District is getting approximately $423,000 for each year for 5 years. And we can apply to the Bright Schools program to get $20,000 worth of free energy audits for our schools, which is one of the requirements for the whole program for Prop 39. And I will also be submitting a Bright Schools application for the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts. They are also eligible for another $20,000 since they are getting $54,000 per year for the next 5 years.
Any questions? It's great news for the schools. We can always use the extra money and the added help. So are there any questions or comments?
Do you have any idea where you're going to put this money and how it's going to be used?
Right now, we are currently focusing on Lyndhurst High School and seeing if we can add some upgrades to the chiller boiler system out there. And we are also looking at doing a project for energy management out at Linda. They have an energy management system now that is extremely old and it no longer works. So under Terry Belladue's recommendation for maintenance, we'll be also looking at putting in an EMS system out at Linda.
Any other questions? If not, is there a motion on resolution 2013-14-14?
Move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. Okay, resolution 2013-14-15 is a disposal of surplus and Warren District property for the 2013-14 school year. Does anybody want Ms. Cartwright to come forward and explain the item? It's something we've done lots of times.
Make a motion okay. To approve.
Motion by Mr. Harris to approve. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Danable, and all those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. Under Superintendent number one, this is the 5-year charter renewal request for Paragon Collegiate Academy. Dr. Todd?
As you know, we have before us a request for a renewal for the term of 5 years for Paragon Collegiate Academy. We held our public hearing in our next to last board meeting, and we are now ready to move on with the approval or denial of their application. But before you take action, I do have with us tonight our consultants who have reviewed their application, and so if Walt, Terry Ryland is ready to go first. I think you all know Terry Ryland. She has done our evaluations before on our charter schools, and she is back here once again. Terry.
Good evening. I'm glad to be before you tonight. Thank you for your prior action. I'll be seeing a little bit more of you, so I'm pleased to do that as well. I'm going to briefly just... are you going to put it up? Okay. I'm going to briefly go through the presentation that you have before you. And not a lot of topics that we haven't discussed before. So I just want to talk a little bit about just the petition process and where we are in it. Talk about enrollment, curriculum, some internal control items, budget, unaudited actuals, and then just real quickly a conclusion. So as you know, back in February of 2010, the initial charter petition was approved by the board. During 12-13, in the midst of looking at renewal, some concerns came forward and there was an investigation and everything was kind of settled and new processes and procedures were implemented. And then at the end of that process, a 1-year extension was approved through the end of this fiscal year. And so now Paragon is asking for a 5-year renewal of their charter. you know, an initial approval of a charter petition can be for any length of time, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. But renewals, once you get into the renewal phase, they are always for 5-year period. And that is what is before you. So this year, we have seen enrollment increases. Enrollment increased up to about 100, or not about, but as of the reports I was given, 142, although it was anticipated and projected to go up to about 170 this year. And then the projections are to go up to 205 students in the next 2 years. And the problem is, you know, we don't have, you know, in the absence of waiting lists or some scientific methodology of making those projections, that's just always uncertain. The revenue projections are based on that increase happening, and so I would just, you know, that just always makes me a little bit nervous. When it's in there for the revenue, there are a couple of additional teachers in there, but there isn't an increase of expenditures that would use up all of that additional revenue. So we just need to be sure that if the enrollment were not to come in, that there's risk on the revenue side, and that we want to visit that, you know, frequently and regularly at the beginning of every year to make sure that the numbers that are coming in are adjusted and match the budgets, particularly on the revenue side, would be the concern. The petition talks about using core knowledge curriculum, and that by the use of that particular curriculum, that would result in a similar educational result to both Rockland Academy and Twin Rivers Charter, which, you know, are held up as high academic programs. And so my questions are, okay, what are the changes that are going to be implemented that would result in that being the natural result of the use of that curriculum? And I believe my colleague is going to speak a little bit more to the test score issue. But again, right now the test score is looking at the first couple of years of operation are not, you know, are actually the lowest in the comparable group. So, again, just an area of concern, certainly one of monitoring as we go forward. Special ed, we did receive, walking in the door tonight, some answers to some of the questions that had been raised. And yes, the district has received evidence of the charter's acceptance into the SELPA in El Dorado County. That's not a problem. The petition was updated to reflect all of the new LCFF language and rates, as well as the requirement for an LCAP, and so their LCAP will be coming to the district in accordance with the state guidelines, and so they are planning on going forward under an LCAP with a budget that supports that. One concern was that compliance with Government Code Section 1090, which is the Conflict of Interest Government Code, was actually stricken from the petition. It was in there before, and it isn't now. And so my question would be, why would the charter be concerned about complying with conflict of interest regulations? And one comment that I wanted to make, and I think I had it on the first slide, and I didn't really say it, is that the level of professionalism in the charter, it was great. The charter is much more complete. Everything was submitted. I mean, we have some questions, but that's not because things weren't necessarily submitted. It was just maybe, you know, interpretation or whatever. But it was a really good package. It was very thorough, a lot less requests for follow-up or anything. It was nice to see just, you know, as every year, of course, everybody gets better, and they know more and more about, you know, operating it and being able to perhaps sunshine or brag about what their program is and put that in a nice comprehensive document. Internal controls and best practices. During the year last year, there were a number of instances where the district felt that the charter really needed to work on improving some internal controls, changing some practices to be more in line with just strong, not really having to do with the fact that it's a charter, but the fact that there's money, there just are certain best practices for any organization that's handling money, if they're receiving money, if they're paying money out, and how that's being handled. And the petition does mention the fact that they will develop these practices and these procedures and, in fact, have changed and added a lot of them. I mean, I still saw a couple of areas that I think that we can work on just to tighten it up and say, oh, okay, I see where this was addressed, but frankly, you know, how about if we add this additional control or do it a different way? but it was, you know, it was something that I thought that's just something we can work on this year. On the budgeting side, and this is an area that I've seen as a problem in a number of charters in other districts as well, is that when the budget comes forward, unless it's in a, quote, SACS, a state account code structure format, a lot of times the restricted and unrestricted revenues as well as expenditures are combined. And as an oversight agency, we can't look at it and say, okay, we're spending an appropriate amount of restricted dollars out of the restricted funds, whether it's, you know, food services dollars or you know, the federal charter grant program monies or special ed monies. Make sure that we're spending restricted dollars on restricted items, and then let's look at what's left on the unrestricted side and make sure that that looks fiscally solid. And so I would just ask that in the future that the reports come in separated, restricted and unrestricted. And I think that that makes it actually easier on the charter side, too, to see how they are implementing their programs and that, you know, how much do they have left of which kinds of, you know, which pots of money. And then the other thing is that there are certain expenses that are kind of student-driven based on the number of students that you have, teachers, certainly, classroom supplies, facilities. I mean, if you have 9 teachers, you need to have 9 classroom spaces. While other expenses are less sensitive to the number of students, which, you know, administration. You're going to have 1 executive director, whether you have, you know, 9 teachers or 12 teachers. You know, debt service payments, that kind of thing. So, but some of the student-related costs, I wasn't seeing them increase at the same rate as the number of students that are projected. You know, if you see a 10% increase in students, you should see a 10% increase to the nearest whole number in teaching staff, or you should see a 10% increase in the number of facilities that you would need to lease. And so I would just, you know, ask for, you know, let's double check there, make sure that the expenditures, I mean, and there's capacity in their budget to afford to be able to do that and still have, you know, to show positive results every year. Let's just make sure that those student-driven costs are being increased ratably with the growth, projected growth in students. The Title V, I guess, is actually the charter school grant block program from the feds. And there is, as presented tonight, there is a letter from CDE saying in the next 8 to 10 weeks that will come to the district, to the charter school. So it has been authorized. I mean, it comes from the feds, but it goes through the state. And so you always check with them to find out what the status of that is. I was concerned no capital outlay is budgeted for 5 years. Is that going to be accurate? You know, adequate? Are we not going to need any more capital facilities? Computers are likely included in books and supplies or in non-capital equipment, which is fine. That, you know, that they wouldn't meet a capitalization threshold. But if there are new classrooms and new teachers coming on in new classroom space, is it reasonable to say there would be no capital outlay but needs? Cash flow looks great. You know, they're not. It looks like they're going to be able to take care of their own cash flow shortfalls without, you know, any threat to district cash flow needing, you know, or them perhaps not even needing to go out and borrow quite as much. And then once the first interim report comes in and we can see the results year to date of the current year, it'll be a lot easier to look at the adequacy of, okay, how does this year's budget actually look? You know, how is it playing out? And then that, of course, drives future years' budgets. Also looked at the unaudited actuals. And one area of concern was that the charter school ended last year with a negative $77,000 fund balance in its restricted funds. That was a report that was turned in, unrestricted versus restricted. And so you could see that on the restricted side. Again, I was handed some information tonight. It appears that while some of the expenditures were accrued in the prior year, the revenues were not accrued, and so they didn't quite match up in last year. But over the 2-year period, it will all zero out. There were also loans payable at the end of last year of almost $300,000. That was a little bit of a shocker. That's a lot of money for a small organization. $22,000 was a line of credit, and that's one of the things that came up during this last year. And we said, wow, you know, a line of credit, like, you know, at a bank, like a credit card kind of line of credit. It's like, well, no, that's not going to happen again. It is happening again. We were assured that all of the borrowings were for cash flow purposes, and they all have been paid off, but again, you kind of want to keep an eye on a charter for which you have that fiscal oversight responsibility, that they would not overextend and get into debt that that would be difficult to pay off. So in summary, just, you know, looking for more information on the methodology for the enrollment projections. You know, how easy is it going to be to get to that 205? Is that likely to happen in what period of time, and will that match with where the revenue is projected? Making sure that the expenses that are student-driven are keeping up with the projected increases in students. And then some of the outstanding concerns, some of which have been addressed earlier tonight, and some of which, you know, we can work on and make sure that that everything meets just a high level of you know, best practices and an informed board as we move forward. So I would just ask for, you know, regular financial updates from the charter to the district, make sure that that oversight continues, that there's just a diligent review, and that, you know, any trend that would happen to go negative would be caught early, and that there can be some collaboration and some working with the charter to make sure that there are not any issues. And obviously, as always, your decision is then, in this case, to renew or not. It is a five-year renewal. And so that is the end of what I have. Are there any questions on the fiscal portion?
Thank you.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Next, we have Kristen Lundgren from
Kingsley Bogard.
Thank you, Kingsley Bogard. I almost put Bogard first, and I knew that wasn't right. Kim would like that, but I don't.
But Bob would not.
Don't think Bob would go for it. So.
Good evening, President Boo, members of the board, Superintendent Todd. Thank you for having me tonight. I do not have a PowerPoint presentation, although some of my points were included in Terry's presentation. As Terry stated tonight, you're asked to deny or either to either approve or deny the renewal petition for Paragon Collegiate Academy. As she stated, it's a five-year renewal. It's automatic under the education code. The board cannot deny a petition unless it makes certain findings, and those findings can be either that the charter school has not demonstrated sufficient pupil achievement, the charter school presents an unsound educational program, the petitioners are demonstrably unlikely to successfully implement the program, the petition does not contain an affirmation of each of the conditions described in Education Code 47605D. Which I'll note, it does meet those, so you don't have to worry about that one for this petition. Or the petition does not contain a reasonably comprehensive description of the 16 factors that we always talk about in a charter, either a new charter or a renewal. We have provided a 39-page analysis chart that you guys have seen before. It's our little form that we use, so I'm not going to belabor every point in there. I'll echo Terry's comments in stating that the petitioners did a very good job with their petition. It was thorough. I appreciated the changes that they made. And I'll also commend them on having good cash flow, because I think that's one of the problems we see come up over and over again with charter schools, is this sort of being on the edge of financial catastrophe. So I thought that that was good and something that we don't see that often. I did have a couple areas of concern. One of the areas I had concerns about was the enrollment numbers. I think Terry covered that sufficiently for you guys. If you have questions, please let me know, but I don't think there's anything else that I need to say about that, except that I just didn't see the basis for that. I know that the petitioners have some material that they have brought for you tonight that will address those issues as well. The other thing, and the big thing for renewals, and it applies only to renewal petitions, is this focus on test scores. And this is a result of a recent bill that was passed in order to allow California to meet federal standards to continue receiving certain federal funds. And there is a heavy focus on test scores. And that is found in Education Code Section 47607A. And it states that the district must consider increases in pupil academic achievement for all groups of pupils served by the charter school as the most important criteria in renewal. There are other provisions of 47607 regarding test scores that apply to renewal, but only to those charter schools who have been in existence for 4 years. This is Paragon's third year, so those don't apply to them. So I'm only going to focus on this one piece. I think, as you saw, the Paragon did not meet its API growth, and in fact it decreased quite a bit. I did note that test scores for socioeconomically disadvantaged students did increase between 2012 and 2013, which is good and is important for a charter school because one of the goals of charter schools is to serve the needs of students whose needs aren't traditionally met. So that's one good piece. But I do think that if this is the most important factor for you to look at in renewal, that you should seriously consider this issue as sort of a glaring issue in an otherwise good petition. Again, I was provided some information that you have as well about that piece, and I think that the petitioners will speak to that as well. But I just wanted to highlight that especially for you because that's kind of state priority right now. The petitioners also have included in their petition several pieces of a plan to try to improve that. So, you know, you can look at that, and I think the fact that they've only been really fully in existence for 2 years, this being their third year, there's not a lot of data. If you go to the Department of Ed website and look at DataQuest, we really only have 2 years' worth of test scores. We only have 1 year worth of growth. There are no comparable schools. So, like, the schools in this district will have a list of 100 comparable schools that you can compare them to. When you go to that piece for Paragon, there are no schools listed because it's small. And so I think that's the other thing. It's sort of hard to know, and they have a small number of students who tested, and so the data isn't as clear as it would be for a larger group of pupils. So those are some caveats to just plain looking at the actual API score. There's some other context to that. So before I move on, are there any questions about that? Okay. I did want to speak to the conflict of interest piece. The petitioners have provided a letter which discusses the legal basis for removing the application of Section 1090 from the petition. As I stated in my analysis, this is an unsettled area of the law, and in fact there's a bill pending right now in the legislature to have charter schools specifically be included in the coverage of Section 1090. So some have argued that because that bill is pending, that means they aren't already covered, and the legislature has acknowledged that. Other experts in the legal field suggest that that's just a clarification. The arguments that the petitioners have presented are decent arguments. It's an unsettled area of the law, and all I can say is that choosing not to follow it is sort of at their own peril. Whether it applies to them or not will be determined by the district attorney or someone who files a civil suit. And so it really, then whether they say it applies to them or not isn't really material. It's whether it could be enforced against them. So I would read what they provided and listen to what they say, but it's an unsettled area of the law. My personal legal opinion and my firm's opinion is that it applies because it's public funds. But there are arguments on the other side. There was one piece I was concerned about regarding student discipline. The parent-teacher handbook had two different lists of causes for student discipline that I felt were contradictory. And in the materials provided by the petitioners, they have agreed to take out one of the lists. And apparently it was placed in there in error. So they cleaned that up, and I appreciate that. They've also addressed other concerns, and I think that they did a good job of doing that. So I would focus on those materials that they provided. And I'll otherwise echo Terry's comments as well. So if you have any questions. Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
And next we have Lenny Tate, the Executive Director for Educational Services.
Good evening. I don't have a lot to add to the two reports that have been stated. The program read really strong. I've had a chance to visit the site a few times. I like being there. I like the environment. The educational program seems strong. I'm not sure what's happening with those API scores. Absolutely, I would love to work with Paragon to help and kind of maybe figure out what's going on over there. I am really surprised that their scores were only at API was 686, which is really low, and I'm not quite sure why that happened. In the next few years, the API has gone away. So we'll be measuring their local benchmarks, their local measurement of achievement. So even if we held them back for renewal because of that API, there's nothing to we won't be able to judge it API to API next year. So you won't have another score to compare the 686 to. Like I said, when we visited, we've seen a very strong instructional program. They use the same curriculum that Marysville Joint Unified School District uses. I hadn't thought of the fact that perhaps it's because of the smaller number of students being assessed during that time period. So it's just that little tiny group of kids that are actually counting. That little group also, it's only the students that have been there for that full year. Kids who have come in or gone out throughout the school year aren't going to count in their scores as well. So overall, it read very strong. Do you have any questions?
Okay. Just one. I'm not too concerned about the API scores because I noticed I think all but two of our schools dropped, and even our school, Browns Valley, has always scored over 950 in the last few years. They were 907. So there might be some problems just with scoring the tests. That's a big drop when you drop 50 points or more.
Yeah.
So.
And you do have dips and rises in the data. Their data has been going down. For me, it is unusual, I would think. They do have, you can see by the turnout here, they have amazing family members that are very supportive of the school. I would just want to make sure that if I had a student at that school, I'd want to know, what are we doing? What is happening in the classroom with our students? Are they at grade level? How are we tackling some of the issues that might come up, like an API result like this? Thank you.
That is the end of the reports from the district's consultants. I'm guessing that Paragon may have a few things they would like to say to the board as well. Looks like Principal Lisa Reese is making her way to the microphone.
Good evening. So I know it looks like a very daunting packet, but I promise I'll make it as quick as possible. All right, so everything that I'm going to show up here is also down here, and I know you have very small print in there because it's all up here as well, so I don't expect you to need a magnifying glass tonight. So just a little bit about Paragon that we opened in 2011 is when we started serving the students. Marysville Joint Unified School District granted Paragon Collegiate Academy the privilege and honor to offer an educational choice to the families in the Yuba Sutter community. In 2011-2012 academic school year, PCA opened and started serving students with the mission and vision of the founders. Our mission is to provide students in the Yuba Sutter community a rigorous standard-based instruction that will provide the individual learner with a holistic and comprehensive college preparatory education in a civic-minded, character-rich small school environment. Paragon Collegiate Academy, Board of Directors, and I value greatly the input and time that Marysville Joint Unified School District has put into reviewing this petition renewal. So, absolutely, establishing a new independent charter school with new curriculum, new teachers, and a new administration does not come without a few hurdles. While Paragon did endure a few hurdles in our first year, the outcome was that an even stronger foundation has been built. We have incorporated many new policies and practices to ensure that similar occurrences will not happen in the future. Similarly, with our school's AYP score, we now have a true baseline and can clearly identify where Paragon needs to focus our attention. It is important to mention that Paragon's economically disadvantaged students did show growth, and they are our only major subgroup at this point. We have one major subgroup, and that's them. Paragon also, in the past couple of years, we have improved our technology as well. So asking, what are we going to do to help these kids? Well, one of the things, for our 142 students, we currently have 85 computers, laptops, iPads, And that's still going to increase. We have starboards in every classroom. We have document cameras in every classroom. So lots of use of technology to help the kids improve. One of the, as we read through this, the top is one of the statements that was made by one of the consultants. One of the changes that Paragon did decide to make in our first year was to slow our growth model. We originally, our petition, we had plans to go through major growth in our first 3 years. Paragon had the option to grow as fast or as slow as we wanted. However, the board and the administration made the decision to slow this model. And we did this in order to better meet the needs of our current students. While all new schools go through growing pains, we wanted to limit these as much as possible. And through our new model, we are doing a gradual increase in enrollment, which allows us to better serve our students. In each of the past years, Paragon has shown a steady increase of about 12% each year. Our plan does include a larger jump this next year due to some of the following facts. We have one more classroom to add. So currently we have a 7th and 8th grade combo class, and next year that class will be split. We anticipate that this is achievable based on the numerous students that we've had to turn away this year in 7th and 8th grade. It's been packed since day one with our maximum of 25 kids, and we continue to have to turn away students in the middle school area. And then in addition, it's important to remember when a 7th or 8th grade student comes, many times they come with siblings, lower grade siblings. So this additional classroom could hold an additional 25 students that we believe we can easily fill, coupled with a new group of kindergartens. So all of our lower grades are full, and as they move up, we have 20 kindergartners also come in. So this brings in an additional 45 students to Paragon, not including any of the middle grades. Our current enrollment is 142 students, and these additional students would bump our population to 187, not including any other students who may enroll in the other grades and siblings. The other thing is, if you look at our budget is for 140 students, not 170. And with our current numbers, we're extremely financially solvent. While our growth model shows the number of students that Paragon could physically hold, the budget is more closely aligned to our actual numbers. In addition, we are constantly reviewing and analyzing our budget. And at the end of the current year, we will again review our student numbers and adjust the budget as needed based on the current number of students enrolled. So as previously stated at our public hearing, Paragon has only had 2 academic school years, and during these 2 years, we have evaluated our strategies and we've made some necessary adjustments. Paragon's continued analysis of our current practices has manifested in determining what is working and what is not. So core knowledge, I think maybe we need a little bit of background about what core knowledge is. It's an outstanding program. However, it doesn't happen overnight. In our first year, Paragon didn't even tackle core knowledge. It's a great endeavor. Instead, we focused on getting our feet off the ground. Starting the second year, we began the journey to becoming a core knowledge school. All of our teachers have now completed year-long curriculum maps that are Common Core and core knowledge aligned. They are currently developing assessments that also align to these Common Core standards. This all takes time to implement and work out the kinks, but be certain that Paragon teachers are working diligently to ensure that they are meeting their students' needs in a very crazy time in terms of standards and accountability. Just background on core knowledge is that it's cumulative. So it's a clear outline of what the students should learn at each grade, and it builds upon itself from year to year. The sequential building of knowledge not only helps it ensure the children enter each grade ready to learn, it also prevents the butterflies is one that happens very often, that this teacher likes butterflies, so they taught a unit on butterflies, and then suddenly a third grade teacher really likes butterflies too, so you hear about butterflies the exact same lesson. This is very clear how the building happens and what the students have to learn. But if you realize, we've only just started this, so our students don't have all that background knowledge just yet. They will, and we're working on it, but it takes time. The other thing about core knowledge is that it's predicated on the realization that what children are able to learn at any given moment depends on what they already know. So it's very much the file cabinet effect. The students have to be able to go into their file cabinet and relate it to something they already have. So we have to build a lot of background knowledge in our kids. And so that's what we're working on. That's when our year-long plans are. But it takes time, again. So we're building their filing cabinet. We also have implemented a new Common Core aligned math program. If you look at our AYP, our big hit was in math, and I believe that a lot of it has to do with the curriculum. We wanted to find a curriculum that aligned to the Common Core, and we found that in Singapore math. In an effort to stay current with the changes the state and the country are making, Paragon has implemented this new math program that more closely aligns with the lofty goals of the Common Core standards. and a little bit about Singapore math. Our textbooks, the Singapore math curriculum, they're called Math in Focus, and they highlight problem solving as the focus of mathematical learning. The program teaches concepts using concrete, pictorial, and abstract learning progression, and it teaches real-world concepts. Hands-on math supported by seamless integration of technology. So the kids use e-books, interactive whiteboard, and online student activities, online manipulatives, and a bar modeling app. So our kids, we're starting with our big kids, they have iPads down there, and they can access their math books online, and their manipulatives are all online. And so this is the Singapore math. As we talked about before, this year is the first year that Paragon has dove into accelerated math and accelerated reader. And they are already showing growth in our students. Students in kindergarten through eighth grade are showing growth in their independent reading and comprehension levels, and there's data that I will show you in a moment. So the data that I'm about to show you is 2 months' worth of data, and our kids have been loving it. Many of our classrooms have grown over 4 months in reading comprehension in those 2 months. In addition, the accelerated math program has been implemented as an intervention as well as an acceleration tool. And again, you can see that Paragon students are making growth in this area. I really love the big screen. This is our overall school report. And the one that's easiest to look at is the GE, which is the grade equivalent. And it says that the average students, their pretest, kindergarten through eighth grade, we tested 116 students, first grade through eighth grade, our kindergartners didn't pretest. Average grade equivalent was a 3.3. 2 months later, they were already up to 3.8. What that means is third grade, fifth month, third grade, eighth month. So they're learning in 2 months. They learned about 5 months' worth of materials. They started filling in the gaps. So if you continue to do that, the students hopefully, and some of our kids jumped phenomenally, while some of them just grew a little bit, but they were all showing growth. This is in your packet. I'm not going to go through it each one, but this is by grade for accelerated math. If you look at, first grade, our first graders are some smarty pants. They came in at first grade second month. We tested them 2 months later. They're at first grade, third month, but they're learning. They're all advancing. I apologize. It's supposed to be 0.6, not 0.06. All of those are not supposed to be with the zeros on the right of the decimal. I keep things interesting, you know. So second graders grew 6 months. Third graders grew 9 months. Fourth graders grew 9 months. Fifth graders grew 7 months. Sixth graders grew 5 months. Seventh graders, 3 months. And eighth graders, 4 months. So again, this was in 2 months worth of time, they were making growth. And this is what we're using every month to assess our kids. We want to make sure that they're at least moving forward before those benchmarks come. Our accelerated reader shows the grade equivalent of the kids coming in August was third grade, fourth month. And when we tested them in October before parent-teacher conferences, it was third grade, eighth month. They had moved up. So again, in 2 months, they went up about 4 months worth of ability. And again, here shows per grade level where they went up. Some of them just phenomenal, and if you look at them, it's because they're learning to read. But our first graders went from first grade 0 months to third month. Second graders went up by a month. Third graders went up by 3 months. Our fourth graders jumped a whole year and 3 months worth of reading ability, so they came in able to read on average at a second grader's level, and 2 months later we're at a third grade level. Our teacher is actually working really hard on their reading ability, so it showed there. And so as you can see all the way down, they showed growth. Our seventh and eighth graders kind of stayed stagnant, which when you're talking about accelerated reader, they read already at that grade level fairly well. So some of them, their grade levels, they're already high to start with, so it's hard for them to get even higher. We do have some kids that are reading at post-high school level, and the computer just says greater than 9. So it's harder to show huge growth there. And some of the other things that we've done, special education students are very quickly becoming a numerically significant subgroup at Paragon. Therefore, we have also employed a full-time special education teacher and an instructional aide that is solely for special ed. These teachers make it possible for our general ed teachers to better meet the needs of their special needs students, as well as spend more time planning for the general ed students. Paragon has a very high percentage of students with special needs, and therefore we're making sure that we're doing everything possible to make sure that this subgroup of students is getting the best education possible and making growth as well. So, as it was brought up before, the state of California has recently done away with the state STAR testing, and students will not be tested this year with this form of assessment. In the following year, the state will be moving towards the Smarter Balance Assessment System, but that leaves us with a two-year gap until another test is administered and evaluated. This is unacceptable in our eyes because we saw the AYP scores as well. And the board and administration has already made the decision to purchase either this or one very similar to the nationally recognized Northwest Education Association Benchmark and Progress Monitoring System. The plan would be for our students at Paragon to begin taking this test already this December, and then they would take it again in May. It's a benchmark test. We would continue using this Common Core aligned computer-based assessment in the future and as a benchmark to make sure that our students are meeting the new Common Core standards and that we're making the changes we need to ensure that all students are growing. So we're already planning on how are we going to assess them, how are we making sure that they're growing, not just hoping for it. The results of this assessment we then share quarterly with the Board of Directors, and this data will be used at our monthly teacher in-service meetings to evaluate student progress and make adjustments to curriculum as necessary to ensure that the students are making growth. In addition, students will be identified through Paragon's RTI program as needing Tier 1, 2, or 3 interventions. And through the use of this data, as well as other data, our teachers collect throughout the year to better analyze students' needs. Students in Paragon are then enrolled in our AAA tutoring program to meet the individual needs based on the findings of our school-wide assessments, progress monitoring assessments, as well as quarterly benchmark reports. And then the student progress is shared with the board to ensure accountability. So one of the things that was brought up, wasn't brought up again tonight, was our board of directors. Just want to clarify, we are at 5 members, but in our petition it states that we could go up to 7 if the board so chooses. But that was clarified in there. And again, in regard to special education, Paragon has been working with El Dorado for the past 3 years, and we plan to continue this partnership. Paragon's our financial audit that was brought up, it was completed by October 31st, and it just hasn't been delivered to us. However, it comes to the district at the same time it comes to us. It's just part of the process that it's delivered to you guys at the same time that it's delivered to us. Paragon has implemented many new policies and procedures, including we have a whole fiscal policies and procedure handbook, and we look forward to any input that Mrs. Ryland has regarding these procedures. We'd love to work with her and get some extra input. Response to Lenny Tate's report. In reviewing Paragon Collegiate Academy request for 5-year renewal, just want to point out all the good things. Examples, explanations and examples of our instructional practice were included. Curriculum was evident. It's developed, our educational program is developed on research-based elements and references. Curriculum objectives are clear and aligned with curricular goals. We do have benchmarks that are evident. Specific and measurable goals were not discussed in detail, but we do have them in place. Data collection plan is realistic, and we do this monthly at the teacher in-services and quarterly to the whole board. The plan for annual reporting of results to identified goals is clear and ensures transparency. They asked about the alignment of educational program with the Common Core standards. Paragon went feet first, head first, the whole thing into Common Core this year. That was a decision that we had made. So the teachers have already, they have year-long plans aligned to Common Core standards. They are benchmark assessing aligned to Common Core standards, and we're ready. They've been working on that. So. Paragon Collegiate Academy must begin to demonstrate meeting or exceeding measurable academic growth as other like schools within the district, and we absolutely agree. And then our plan for progress monitoring, I did talk about previously that we're going to ongoing through teacher observation, classroom assessment, and benchmark assessment, and we do have an intervention plan if the students are falling below, and that includes our SST, Student Success Team. If for some reason that does not find the student successful, then we move on to the special ed possibly referral or 504. And then any additional tools, the Common Core is still new, so as the state comes up with tools, we're looking to implement them as well. But we are going to continue looking at individual student performance and data that would allow our staff to find the problems ahead of time and identify them and work with those students. So corrective action ahead of time for those students who are falling below the minimum performance. And that one I already have, and that we already talked about. The other thing the district brought up was special ed and child find. It was kind of unclear what we were looking for, and we do take care of all of our own special ed needs. We do have outside contractors that work with us. We have our own school psychologist, we have our own occupational therapist and speech therapist, and like we talked about, we have a full-time special ed teacher. So in Child Find, which is identifying and assessing students, we do take care of that as well for our students. It did question, the petition didn't identify a key position, and the only key position at Paragon is the administrator, and we are a very small staff with small amount of students. And it does bring up that the renewal petition does not provide a specific process for checking credentials, and again, we do this annually when a teacher is hired. We go through the Yuba County Office of Ed and or the Commission on Teacher Credentialing to ensure that all the teachers are certified before we hire them, and annually check them, usually biannually. Over the summer, I make sure that everybody coming in is still certified, and then that when they have their annual evaluation, we check again. And then this was just an addition that Paragon Collegiate Academy shall comply with all applicable state and federal laws regarding environmental protection. And then it was brought up that the district wanted a notification of expulsions, and absolutely that Paragon would provide the district with notification if we were to expel a student with all the backup documentation, and if they didn't come from Marysville, like let's say a child from Yuba City, we would make sure that the superintendent at Yuba City was also identified as well. And this was brought up, the student handbook, there was it was amended this year, and the new laws regarding student expulsions and suspensions was added, and the other one was forgotten to be taken out. So we appreciate Marysville for finding that, and we are going to fix it so that they don't contradict each other. And Paragon will now be in compliance with the law. Talking about enrollment, this is a big one. One of the changes that Paragon did decide was that we slowed that growth model. But we are limiting these, and our students, like we said, we do see that we've seen a pattern of 12% growth each year, and we've also seen a whole bunch of kids this year that we had to turn away. So we feel that our projection is a reasonable projection. However, we're fully willing. We look at our budget on a regular basis. At board meetings with our business manager, we look at that and make sure that our numbers are accurate. So just feel confident that we are on top of that. And we do have two additional small people to talk. Our lawyer is here to address the 1090 and a little bit about the AYP, and then our business manager is here to address some concerns for you.
On the students that you turned away, did you keep a list or is there a waiting list?
So it's real hard when students are trying to enroll. We've gotten a few of them, but a lot of times they call on the phone and say, do you have room in your 7th grade class? And no, we don't, but we'd love to take your number. And if somebody, they're looking for a spot right then and there, and they said, oh, yeah, we'll come down, and they don't come down. When you tell them no, they get real disgruntled and turn away. Do you have room in your 2nd and 8th grade class? Well, we have room in 2nd, but not 8th, and so they just leave. So it's real hard to do a waiting list like that, especially when they want now. They're going to go someplace else. So we try. There's a small waiting list. But.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Does anybody have any other questions?
No? Good evening. My name is Aiko Yamakawa. I'm with the law firm of Procopio here in support of Paragon's charter renewal this evening. And I wanted to briefly address the 1090 issue. You'll find a letter in the packet of materials we submitted that goes through the analysis in further detail. But I don't want to belabor the point. I do want to emphasize that Paragon will comply with the Political Reform Act and all applicable conflict of interest laws. So this ensures that in the event an individual has a potential conflict of interest, that is disclosed, that the individual recuses himself from making or participating in the making of that decision where that potential conflict of interest is implicated. And so Paragon will comply with the law and will ensure against conflicts of interest. However, it's our analysis that Government Code Section 1090 in particular does not apply to charter schools for the reasons that we elaborate in our letter. But also importantly, the reason why it's an issue here is because Government Code 1090 would
restrict, for example, teachers from potentially serving on the board. And Paragon would like to maintain the flexibility in the future to potentially include teachers on its governing board. And we believe that this is consistent with the intent of the Charter Schools Act and also the flexibility that was granted under the mega waiver from many of the education code provisions, including the specific education code provision that applies 1090 to school districts. So again, the point is that Paragon will comply with all applicable conflict of interest laws, including and will comply with the Political Reform Act to ensure that any potential conflict of interest is disclosed and that person recuses himself or herself. Thank you.
Scott Warner from CSMC. Thank you for your time. And I, too, will try and be brief. Is mine on here? I was here a few months ago for a different charter school, and I do represent a few charter schools in Northern California, so I won't bore you with the details. I don't know if you remember me or not, but CSMC is the back office provider for Paragon, so we handle all the day-to-day transactions, AP, payroll, revenue recognition, journal entries, etc., out of our Temecula office. And I am here local. I live up in Grass Valley. And I'm their business manager. And I work, you know, very closely with Lisa and Serafin on the budgeting and cash flow. And I attend the board meetings and, you know, kind of the oversight of that. So I just wanted to address a couple of the issues that Terry Ryland had brought up in her analysis involving the operations. The three big ones that I saw were the aggressive enrollment projections, which I think has been addressed significantly, the negative restricted fund balance, and the balance of their debt. As far as the aggressive enrollment, you know, charter schools are definitely a different animal than districts, and, you know, in my estimation, the hallmark of a charter school is the ability to be flexible. We don't have to deal with, you know, bargaining units, and we don't have to deal with a lot of the, lack of a better word, bureaucracy that many school districts have. So they're able to, you know, be nimble and make decisions quickly and adjust. And part of that process is the budgeting process. When we do the budget, you know, we typically have four formal budget reviews, the submission in June to the district, the adopted budget, then, you know, as soon as school starts and we see where the enrollment is, we do another budget renewal after the first interim and the second interim. So there's really, you know, three or four major budget reviews throughout the year. This year in particular, there's been even more because of the advent of the LCFF funding formulas. We've also, you know, since, to be honest with you, I don't even remember exactly which budget was submitted with the petition because there's been, you know, quite a few revisions since then. And the most recent one that I did for them did include the LCFF revenue models. So, you know, currently we have two budget models, if you will, one with the current 142 students that are enrolled at the school, and you know, we also did a projection out, you know, what would happen if a scenario, if, you know, they didn't have you know, even one more student come in, and, you know, any scenario that we've come up with, the school continues to add to their fund balance and is, you know, extremely fiscally viable. So, you know, it's my estimation that, you know, whether they go to 200 students or they go down to 130 or even 100 students, I think that, you know, we will be able to adjust accordingly and ensure that they'll be able to be fiscally viable. As far as the negative fund balance, It is absolutely just in the restricted portion. They did add to their fund balance overall. The program that Terry was speaking of is a Title V program that is funded by the federal government, but it's the PCSGP grant, and it's some people call it the Planning and Implementation Grant. It's a grant that it lasts for 3 years, and it does exactly what it says it's to do for charter school, to help plan and implement this charter school. In order to complete this, there's a definitive time period that ended in March of 2012. So they essentially had to spend their entire grant money before March of 2013. Well, the fiscal year ended in July of 2013. So, and they are still waiting for $150,000 to come from that program. So that the $70,000 negative restricted fund was because they used part of their school's fund balance to basically fund the slow turnaround time of the PCSGP program to get them their funds. So, as Terry said, it's actually a 4-year period. So 3 years of the grant and then another year to collect the final funds. That it will all equal out. So there will not be a negative fund balance next year. And that also kind of goes towards this year, that there are, there was some carryover into this year, so there's a few things that were carried over, but again, it will all equal out in the end. The debt balances, they have three different sources that made up that $276,000 thing. One of them was the revolving loan that is a program for charter schools through the CDE. They did receive some of those funds, and that is a set repayment schedule, and we would like to pay it off sooner, but we pay it according to their schedule, and they are on time. They got a small line of credit, the $20,000 that she spoke about, and that will also be paid off this year. And then also another chunk of that was a cash flow loan from charter school capital that enabled the school to weather all the deferrals that happened last year, and that was all paid off in September. So we're good to go on that. And as I said, the LCFF monies were definitely budgeted for. They did see an increase in revenue from the LCFF because of their high free and reduced counts in English language learners. So, all signs point to that they are definitely viable going forward, and I don't see any problems. So, questions? Oh, and the other thing I wanted to bring up was the budgeting that Terry had mentioned, that they did not budget for the books and supplies and things like that in proportion to the growth of the enrollment. And that is because with the PCSGP grant, they bought all their stuff. So they have textbooks for 205 students. They have, they're still, they're pretty well stocked on technology. They have all the furniture. They have, the portables. They leased portables, so they won't have any capital expenses because they leased their property. And they also put a couple portables onto it, either expansion. So they have all the physical and necessary things. So we budgeted for that, all that stuff last year. Questions?
Any questions? No questions? No, thank you.
I did want to help save you guys tonight. We have all kinds of parents that would be more than happy to come up here and tell you how wonderful Paragon is, but instead we could just ask them, if you're in support of Paragon, could you please stand? So that'll save you from having to hear from each one of them tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, do you have any other speakers? You done? Okay, Dr. Todd, do you have a recommendation or?
I think after the analysis that our consultants have meticulously completed, and solely because I have worked with Lisa Reese, that I would recommend that the board approve the 5-year renewal petition
with the caveat that some of the items that were outlined by Terry on page 4 of 4, some of which have already been addressed. There are a few others that I'd like to see incorporated, but certainly something that I'm sure we can resolve as long as Paragon is okay with working with Lisa and I working together to make sure those are resolved. I can say yes, I would support the renewal of their petition.
Okay, any other questions? Mr. Flory, you have a question? Any comments? No, my only comment is if you're going to kind of aggressively use enrollment as a way to build your budget, I would sure as heck try to get names of students one way or the other. You know, even, you know, half of them or a third of them, a quarter of them, and go back and knock on their doors the following year. That's your future. That's your bread and butter. I mean, so, you know, I know you're saying that even if enrollment drops, we can still make it. But, you know, it's a lot easier to grow than to go backwards. So that would just be a suggestion. And then the debt balance, you talked about it, but you didn't give us a number. So did you agree with the number that Terry had given us? Okay.
The revolving loan, I believe, is $142.
Right.
And the
okay, I just wanted to make sure there wasn't a discrepancy between what you were saying for a number and what she was saying for a number.
Okay.
Right. Okay, any other questions or comments?
If not, I'd like to make a motion to approve with the caveat that Dr. Codd.
Okay, motion by Mr. Harris to approve, and seconded by Mr. Miller, and all those in favor?
Aye.
7 yes, unanimous. Thank you very much.
Congratulations. Good luck.
And a couple of things before we close. I'd like to thank all the veterans that are here tonight. We have 3, I believe, that we serve on our board of trustees. Thank you very much for your service to our country. And any veterans that are in the audience, thank you very much. Your service is greatly appreciated. And then, Mr. Flurry, you'd like to close the meeting in honor of somebody?
Employee that worked for us for many years, Cheryl Henry, started his career at an Oliver school, worked with the first principal, then he worked with Mrs. Todd's husband when he became the principal. He also ran for Yuba County Office of Ed for the superintendent. He retired as the vice principal at McKinney School, and he just passed away last week. So I'd like to close the meeting in his memory.
Okay, thank you. Meeting's adjourned.